Bill Stewart. Can you remember the first time you ever went to a zoo? Didn't the animals seem amazing? The very first time you saw an elephant, can you recall how huge it seemed, how unbelievable its trunk was, how extraordinary it was that this great, fantastic creature was actually there, sharing its world with you? If you live close to a zoo, then for you, it is probably still the zoo. It may still have affectionate memories from your time there with strange exotic creatures, the curious smells, and a place full of beasts with a power to fascinate, intimidate, and amuse you. Today's guest is the director of the Western North Carolina Nature Center in Asheville, North Carolina. Chris, say the last name.
Gentile.
Gentile.
Dale. I mean, he just told me. We talked about this for a while.
He just told me that, and I absolutely went blank on it. But Chris, as I said, is the director. He has a Bachelor of Science in Biology from Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts.
That's Worcester. Let me correct you, because I know Matt, being from Massachusetts, would be very quick to correct you on that.
See, you get these people from north of the Mason-Dixon line on here, and the first thing they do to us poor southern boys is correct us when we do that. And I need to get him down in South Louisiana and some of those pronunciations. But Chris also has a master's in secondary education from the University of, is that Bridgeport?
That's correct. Very good. That's an easier one.
That's it. And in 1994, he began with zoo and aquarium career at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens in the education department. And since then, he's held management positions at Roger Williams Park Zoo in Providence. I'm assuming that's Rhode Island.
The little estate. That's right.
The little estate. The Franklin Park Zoo in Boston. And Riverbanks Zoo and Garden in Columbia, South Carolina. And how long have you been at Western North Carolina?
It's been 5 years now. I started in 2009, yep.
Chris, give us a little history of the Nature Center.
Well, you know, Dale, it's interesting. You were talking about elephants when we first opened the show. Believe it or not, the Nature Center had its roots as the Asheville Zoo at one time. And folks will remember, we're over in Recreation Park, which is on the east part of Asheville. And Recreation Park at one time used to feature amusement-type rides. There was a big lake there, Lake Craig, where people can rent paddle boats and things like that. And, of course, as any good city park would have, it had its own little zoo. It had its own little menagerie. And at one time, the old Asheville Zoo, featured lions and baboons and elephants. Mm. And up until 1982, even after we became the Nature Center in the mid-70s, we still had an elephant, an Asian elephant named Henrietta. She was with us, even though we focus on Southern Appalachian wildlife, we still had an Asian elephant, so figure that one out. And she stayed with us until 1982 when she passed away, and then she's actually buried on site at the Nature Center. So people growing up oftentimes, or people that have grown up in Asheville, oftentimes come to the Nature Center and say, I remember my when Henrietta was here. I had my picture taken with her. Yeah. I remember coming here when I was in fifth grade, and I was amazed to see an elephant in Asheville. So
and she was an Asian?
She was an Asian elephant.
Small ears.
Small ears, yeah. Right, exactly. Shaped like the continent of India.
That's right.
Or the country of India, which is where they're from, and African elephants have the continent of Africa, that's right. So that's easier to remember.
So at what stage then did it sort of transition to the Nature Center?
Well, in the 1970s, actually the Junior League of Asheville brought together some money to create a Nature Center to really focus more on Southern Appalachian wildlife, because we have such a unique habitat here in the mountains.
Yes.
We have animals that live nowhere else in the world, certain salamander species and things that you can't find anywhere else in the world. So they really wanted to highlight the fact that we live in a tremendously diverse and unique area. So when the Nature Center first started, it started really as a building with education programs and some small exhibits inside. And then gradually over the years, over the next 40 years, we started to add a lot of outdoor exhibits. Mm. So now we are truly, even though we have the name Nature Center as our title, we're truly a zoological facility. We have 60 species of animals that are native to the Southern Appalachian Mountains. We work with 250-plus specimens. So when people come to the Nature Center, sometimes they're surprised because they think it's going to be just a Nature Center experience, but then it ends up being more like a zoological experience, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is, and I can tell people anywhere in the listening. If you get into Asheville, that is certainly one of the places that I strongly recommend that you go, and especially if you have kids.
Absolutely, Dale. Thank you.
Take them there. So, how large is it? How many acres?
We operate a 42-acre site. And on that site, one of the things I think that makes us so unique is obviously we have the terrain that's typical in Asheville with the mountains, the up and down. So when we do our exhibits, when we have exhibits for things like red wolves and cougars and otters and things like that, we could really use the terrain and the elevation that we have at our site to our advantage. So we could show animals of what exactly how they would look in a mountainous habitat, which is phenomenal. So a lot of our exhibits don't necessarily have to be fabricated like you might see in other zoos, make a habitat, make a rainforest, like an African rainforest or something like that. Instead, we could play off the natural landscape and exhibit the animals in their true natural setting.
And you do.
We do, yeah. And I think I mentioned to you, Dale, when we were talking before the show, that a lot of times when people come to the area, they come because of the natural beauty of Asheville. They come because of the Blue Ridge Parkway and Smoky Mountains and all the waterfalls we have. And, that's a real attraction to our area is the natural beauty, the natural wonder. A lot of people also come, of course, to see some of the native wildlife that we have here. And you might get out into the hiking trails and things like that, and you may never see things like otters or black bear or things like that. So we like to provide kind of the overview to some of the wildlife that you see when you come to the Southern Appalachians. So when people come and visit us, they can get a taste of the diversity that we have here, just in case they never see those species when they're out doing their own natural encounters.
And speaking of species, how many species do you currently hold?
We work with approximately 60 species. Now, that number fluctuates depending on arrivals and departures and things like that.
Sure.
As I mentioned before, we are a full zoological facility, so we're accredited by a National Zoological Association, the AZA, Association of Zoos and Aquariums. So we work very cooperatively with other zoos and aquariums across the country. So the species, as I mentioned before, that we typically work with are the animals that you'll see in our area, in the Southern Appalachian area. Exactly. So you're not going to see lions and tigers and grizzly bears and things like that. You're going to see animals like black bear, North American river otter, rattlesnakes and copperheads and things like that. The animals that, even though you may never see when you come for a visit here, are sharing our home with us here in the Southern Appalachians.
We got a couple of minutes in this segment. Let's talk a little bit about the red wolf.
Yes, that's a species that we work very closely with.
I know you do. And tell us a little about the red wolf.
Well, actually, Dale, it's a great conservation story. And it's a story of an animal species that was saved by a true cooperation between the federal government and zoos and aquariums.
Yeah.
At one time, red wolves used to range throughout much of the southeastern United States, all the way over into Oklahoma and Texas. And now the only place in the world you could find them in the wild is on the east coast of North Carolina at Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge,
right,
which is up in the North Carolina-Virginia border area. And actually what's really interesting about red wolves is back in the 70s, their numbers were down as few as under 20 animals, about 16, 17 animals.
Yeah, I was aware of that.
And from the animals that were brought into a zoological setting, the numbers have now been bred back up to about 400 individuals in the world. About 150 of them are in the wild. A little more than 200 live in zoos and nature centers and places like that across the United States. So it's a species that we've had great success with. We've actually, we had a litter of pups 2 years ago. We had four red wolves born. And over the past 10 years, we've had seven red wolves pups born at the nature center. Some of those have actually gone to other facilities and have helped breed to bring population even up to greater numbers.
Yeah, I know you've had a very successful breeding program there with the red wolf, and as we end this segment, when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about not only about the red wolf, but about some of the other animals. In other words, where do you get your animals? What kind of relationship do you have with other zoos to trade animals out?
Sure.
Back and forth and do that, and we'll talk a little more about maybe some of the endangered species that. Of the Southern Appalachians region that you have there, and just continue our discussion. This is Dale Stewart, and you are listening to Nature's Edge. Welcome back. You're tuned to Nature's Edge. I'm Dale Stewart, and I have a special guest with me today, Chris.
Gentile.
Thank you.
I had it right that time. And then Leslie jumps in there.
I always kind of thought it was memorable, but yeah. Thank you, Dale.
Chris is the director of the Western North Carolina Nature Center. And, you know, for people that might not know, Chris, could you kind of define the difference between the Nature Center that you guys have and a zoo?
Well, actually, we are a zoo.
I know
We function just like a zoological facility would. And I think maybe 40 years ago, the word zoo was kind of a dirty word.
Yeah.
Because you think of animals in cages, right? You see two by two, almost like
a
postage
stamp
collection.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. So I think a lot of people think of the word zoo, they have these connotations of animal prisons and things like that. But I think one of the things that we like to pride ourselves in, obviously, is focusing on the southern Appalachian species.
Correct.
We feel like we could provide a great opportunity for people to connect with animals that they live with but they may never see. So it's a great opportunity. We were talking about bears and bear safety before. We were talking about there's been a lot of conversations about what to do if you see a rattlesnake while you're hiking and things like that. We like to think that people can come to the Nature Center, learn about some of the animals we share our habitats with here in Western North Carolina, and then be a little bit more appreciative when they go out and they encounter these animals in the wild because it's their home as well. So we really like to give people that opportunity to ask questions.
Yeah, and we were talking about the red wolf before and how the red wolf, thanks to zoos and zoological centers, has sort of come back from the brink of extinction.
That's right.
There. And I know that the Nature Center has a very successful breeding program with the wolves. Now, when you have the pups, when they're born, I know you're going to maintain some of them, but then I'm guessing that other pups wind up at other zoos or other zoological parks.
Yeah, that's right, Dale. And one of the things that people may not realize about zoos is, especially zoos that are members of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, we all work together.
Yeah.
So there's no competition between us and, say, the Greenville Zoo just south of us or the Knoxville Zoo in Tennessee or the North Carolina Zoo in Asheboro. I mean, we all work together. We're all in the same organization. So when we talk about a red wolf program, we don't just think of the four red wolves that we have on exhibit. We think of the 150, 200 wolves that are in zoos and nature centers like ours across the country. So there's a person that actually manages what we call a species survival program, and they have knowledge of every animal that's in a zoo across the world or across the country in this case. So what that does is it keeps us cognizant of what animals have bred, what animals might be closely related, so they can kind of do formulas and mean kinship type studies to figure out which animals would produce the greatest genetic diversity.
Yeah.
Because in the case of the red wolf, the goal is to reintroduce these animals into the wild.
Well, that was my next question.
That's right.
Are any of the red wolves at this time going back into the wild?
Yes, sir. Released? And actually what's really great about the program is the population of wolves in nature centers and zoos has created such a great offspring, generational offsprings, that some of these animals could be reintroduced back into the wild. Now, we mentioned before that Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge on the eastern coast of North Carolina is a place where red wolves have been successfully reintroduced.
Mm-hmm.
There was also an opportunity a number of years ago to try to reintroduce wolves into Smoky Mountain National Park. That didn't work as well, mostly because it's a wide open park. And
was that the red wolf?
Red wolf. And what happened was the wolves spread out so much and then they couldn't find one another. So they ended up interbreeding with coyote and animals that were very similar. The great thing about Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge and the surrounding areas is it's much more controlled because you've got water on multiple sides. You've created like a peninsula in a way. And the wolves, it's easier for the biologists and the folks that work out there to keep things like coyotes off the area where red wolves live. It's easier to keep people from potentially going in there and hunting them.
Yeah.
Not that they would hunt the red wolf, but people do hunt coyote.
They do.
And red wolf and coyote look very similar. So sometimes it's a case of mistaken identity.
Oh, absolutely.
So whenever you talk about a successful program that's run with a zoo and an animal that's been reintroduced, things like California condor, black-footed ferret, there's a number of species out there that have been successfully reintroduced. It's always a partnership between the zoo facility, the experts in the animal care, and then the folks that work for Fish and Wildlife or for the local state game departments, the experts in the conservation element. Because it takes a lot to put an animal back into the wild. It's not just simply releasing them. It's the knowledge of protecting them, of educating people about the plight that they have, things like that. So it's a big effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me ask you about what other endangered species do you guys have available for the public to view?
Well, we work with a lot of species that are, like I mentioned before, are very specific to the southern Appalachians. A lot of the salamander species that you see around here really don't live anywhere else. And we work with a very large salamander called the hellbender.
Mm-hmm.
And the hellbender is the largest salamander that we have living in North America. It's actually the third largest salamander in the world. So they get to be close to 2 feet long. And they really prefer to live in fast-moving, cooler streams like
they do,
we have
yeah.
in the mountain, like Davidson River in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a very specific habitat. You don't find them just anywhere. You're not going to find them in the French Broad River,
nope.
for example. So one of the things that we work with them is we work as a triage facility. So, for example, if somebody, a biologist or some of the folks working with them down in Transylvania County, where the Davidson River is in Transylvania County, North Carolina, if they find injured hellbenders, they'll bring them to us and we could help to bring them back to health to once again be reintroduced into the wild. And there's a lot of zoos that are working as hellbender hatcheries where they'll actually raise hellbender, you know, the young, and then when they get to be big enough, they'll be reintroduced into the wild. So it's another species.
Are you all doing that? Are you raising any?
We're not necessarily set up to raise the young, but we feel as a triage facility, as a wildlife rehab facility in a way, we're able to help the ones that are out there, the wild ones that have already become used to living in the wild, have produced offspring probably in the wild, maybe have been injured for a number of reasons, caught by a fisherman accidentally or something like that. We can help bring those animals back to good health and release them back into the wild.
What about other other than the hellbender? I mean, I would do people bring you injured animals?
Yeah, and actually that's one of the things I think that people, when they think of a zoo, we want people to think of it as being a trusted voice for wildlife.
Correct.
So in our case, when people find an injured animal, like whether, even if it's something that we think is common, like a squirrel or certain songbirds or things like that, a lot of people will call us first because they trust us. They feel like we're the ones that can give them good information on what to do with an injured animal they found. In a lot of cases, we'll hook those people up with licensed rehabbers in the area, somebody that can take the animal directly and help to nurse it back, hopefully to health, to be reintroduced. But in some cases, we serve as kind of a halfway house for them. So people will bring us animals. We can give them some care until we can place them with a certified wildlife rehabilitation professional. And one of the things that we always caution people is if they have animals that could be considered dangerous, like something that could potentially carry rabies, like a fox or they find a raccoon or something like that, we always will help them by taking those animals because we also don't want people to be in harm's way because there are certain diseases that wildlife can carry that could be transmissible
Absolutely.
To humans. Exactly.
Absolutely.
So we do have quite a lot of that, Dale. We have and we certainly welcome that role because we know that people have put their faith in us and a lot of zoos feel the same way by calling us, and we want to make sure we give them good education and good information.
Well, as you know, I've worked sort of on the periphery with a lot of zoos all over the world, and I do know that that's one of the things that all zoos that I know all say absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah, sure.
That's sort of part of our mission is, and you've got the public trust there.
That's right, and if you think about the North Carolina Zoo, which is a very large facility in the center of our state, they feature exotic animals as well, animals from Africa and places like that, and things you won't find just in North Carolina. They have a wonderful wildlife rehabilitation clinic on site.
They do.
And they work with folks from all over the central part of the state, all the way down into Charlotte, up into Raleigh-Durham and places like that. And it really provides the opportunity for people to feel connected to nature. Because if somebody's finding an injured animal, even if we think, heck, just another squirrel, you know, they're making a connection with wildlife. And if they feel enough passion in their heart to try to save that animal, then they've made a connection. And who knows where that will lead. So we never want to discourage that opportunity.
Absolutely. You're listening to Nature's Edge. My name is Dale Stewart, and we're visiting with Chris Gentile. And Chris is the director of the Western North Carolina Nature Center. We shall return. Welcome back to Nature's Edge. This is your humble host, Dale Stewart. My in-studio guest today is Mr. Chris Gentile, director of the Western North Carolina Nature Center. And we're talking about the center. We're talking about some of the various species that they have there. We're talking about the Red Wolf and the successful program that they have with the Red Wolf there. And the Nature Center primarily has animals from the Southern Appalachian region that are there. And we were talking about some of the other endangered species, Chris, that you guys have there. And you were talking about the relationship with the other parks and sort of keeping up the records, the genetic records and breeding records and so forth on that. And we were also talking about returning some of the animals born in zoological parks back to nature, which is something that I think that's one of the things that the zoological parks around the world have been very successful in doing. Mm-hmm. And I've got a since we're talking about that about wild animals and so forth, one of the things I get asked all the time, excuse me, Chris, and that has to do, you know, and I think you and I agree that in a perfect world there would be no zoos.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sure,
but that's not reality, and would be interested in what you have to say to some of the very zealous animal right activists out there who really view all zoos as prisons and all animals in captivity should be freed.
Well, first I'll say that, you know, obviously you speak from the heart, and people really believe that, and it's something I think that's valid, because nobody really wants to think of domineering another species or you know, us keeping animals in a jail or something like that. But I think one of the things that's very important, and the reason why I think zoos and nature centers are so successful, and the reason why people visit them, is because it gives you a chance to make a connection with something that you really don't have any other way to make a connection with. I know, Dale, you've done so much traveling, and a lot of us have traveled a lot. But, you know, some people are just never going to get the opportunity to visit a place like Africa or Central America or places like that. And you see these TV specials that feature howler monkeys and tapir and some of the animals mm-hmm. that you see in other parts of the world. And you just don't have the opportunity to make that connection that you can make at a zoo. And if you think about it, the animals that are at zoos really are ambassadors for their wild counterparts.
They are.
Because some of the animals that we have in zoos and aquariums are never going to be returned to the wild. The goal of a species survival program in the case of certain species isn't to return them to the wild. It's to continue to have animals that can help kind of serve as ambassadors for the wild places that they live. And the opportunities for people to learn a little bit more about what goes on in different parts of the world and some of the things that these animals are facing, the pressures that they're facing in the world, and hopefully motivate people to act a little bit more on their behalf. Now, it's very important to know that, you know, you're usually going to act on something's behalf when you feel passionate about it. And at Western North Carolina Nature Center, we obviously feature animals that potentially live in people's backyards here in the Southern Appalachians. And we think it's very important to make a connection with your local wildlife.
Yes.
But what we've seen a lot in zoos, and having worked at zoos that features exotic species, is if you've made that local connection, a lot of times then it's easier to make that jump to care about things that might be outside of your neighborhood, things that might be in your own state, things that might be in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, you might become motivated to act on behalf of animals in other parts of the world. Like you, Dale, traveling to other parts of the world, your motivation was to visit these exotic places, I'm sure.
Yes.
You've made connections with animals that we don't have here in Louisiana where you grew up. And I think it's important to know that some of the great conservation people that have developed over the years or have become prominent over the years started as kids in zoos, started as kids who had a connection with an animal at a zoological facility. And then they've become the people that now are out in the wild protecting these wild places, protecting these animals that live out there, speaking on behalf of animals to lawmakers in Washington and things like that. So that's a very important thing. And almost to a one, they've had their connection some way at a very young age.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, I speak at a lot of elementary schools and schools all over the place, and generally, if I'm talking about animals that I've seen in the wild or been around in the wild, inevitably some kid will raise his hand or something and talk about seeing that animal at the zoo.
That's right.
And so that's kind of, you know, when I started the program and talking about, do you remember the first time you went to a zoo? most everyone at some point in their life has been to a zoo.
Well, and the other thing about zoos is, you know, we've done a lot of studies in the international organization as to what motivates people to come to a zoo. What do people think about zoos?
Sure.
What kind of behavior change do they have if they visited a zoo? How does that make them different in terms of being good conservationists? And really what it comes down to is zoos are places where people can come, spend time with their family, start a conversation about things different than their day-to-day routines. And really it's a place where they can come and have a safe and enjoyable time. So when you come to a zoo like the Nature Center or to the Knoxville Zoo or some of the zoos in our region, you're coming with a family group. You're having discussions about wildlife.
Yes.
And by having that discussion and starting that conversation, that hopefully can continue to when you leave the zoo. And then the next time you see an animal on Discovery Channel or National Geographic, you'll say, remember the time we saw that cougar at the Western North Carolina Nature Center? Oh, yeah, I remember that. And then that starts the conversation that builds the ethic in people that motivate them to become more working more on behalf of the environment.
Oh,
we all have those experiences.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I met a young lady a couple of years ago, actually, in Belize, who's now a primatologist specializes in howler monkeys and spider monkeys down there. And she was an urban girl. I grew up in either New York City or Brooklyn, but
started out going to the Bronx Zoo.
But started going out to the Bronx Zoo, and really, that's where her first love of primates and monkeys got. And she never lost that awe of them. And now she says, you know, it all started going to the zoo with her dad and her grandfather there in New York.
Well,
though she was an urban thing.
That's right, and you know, and to think about that, you know, if she didn't have that experience, would she have gotten into that? And probably has done things to help save animals in the wild.
Oh, she has, yeah.
Through that connection she made at a zoological facility. So, people always ask me, do I think there'll always be room for zoos in our society? And to be honest, I mean, zoos have been around since thousands of years. I mean,
absolutely.
The Tower of London and traveling menagerie collections. People have always had a fascination with the natural world. And I think zoos help to start conversations with your family and to pass down these stories from generation to generation, because you know your early experiences also solidify the fact that you spent quality family time together
it
at
does.
A place like ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk a little more about some of the education programs in a moment, but as people walk around the Nature Center now, do you have staff pretty available for
we
them
sure
to ask
do.
Them questions?
Yeah, our animal care staff and our education staff, we have a great team of volunteers that walks around. We have daily presentations that allow people to ask questions. For example, we have an otter presentation every day at 11:30. So there's always the opportunity for people to interact with somebody. Of course, we have graphics and interactives things, but you'd much rather go up to somebody with a Nature Center shirt on and ask them a question than interacting with a graphic. And I think one of the things that's really exciting is if somebody has a question or a story, even if it might be totally out of left field or maybe not be totally factual, you know, you see the passion that they have, and they really want to tell you their story. So, again, it's just cultivating that interest that they have.
It is.
Maybe filling in and helping them with some of the facts, but just allow them to enjoy the moment, enjoy the chance that they're having there and tell their story and become better connected with their environment. That's, I think people really have that need. It's a primal need, I think, that we have to connect better with nature.
Oh, it is. And it's pretty amazing to me sometimes, especially with kids. One of my presentations that I make actually shows me with some of the predator, the big lions, actually in Africa. And I've actually had kids say, oh, you're in a zoo. No, I'm actually not in a zoo. And, I'm actually around the animals in the wild. And they're always fascinated, and they always have questions and comments. Or what's it like to touch one of them, or what's it like? And being able to share that with these kids and to talk to them about it, it really begins to hit home, and it brings nature to them.
That's right. And gone are the days, Dale, of the bring them back alive, Frank Buck, go out to Africa.
Absolutely,
and collect
yeah.
a lion and bring it back. You know, most of the animals that you see in zoological collections today were actually born in a zoological facility. So they've never been wild, but they're serving such an important mission by helping their wild counterparts.
I'm going to cut you off there, Chris, this segment. This is Dale Stewart. You're listening to Nature's Edge. We shall be back after this brief break. Welcome back to Nature's Edge. My in-studio guest, Mr. Chris Gentile. Chris is the director of the Western North Carolina Nature Center, and we've been talking about animals and all things to do with the Nature Center there. And right before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about staff there that's available and some of the education. And I know, Chris, you guys have a pretty strong education programs available there.
Yeah, we sure do, Dale. And actually, our mission is the cornerstone of our mission is conservation and education, because if we can't teach people about the world we live in, then what's the purpose of having animals in a zoological setting?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we have the opportunity to tremendous leverage to bring people in and to teach them about some of the things that we live with and that are part of our natural ecosystem and things like that. And we do programs for preschoolers right on up to adults. I mean, we do programs for all ages, all abilities. We have a lot of opportunities for people to not only come to the Nature Center, but we do outreach programs to schools and to camp groups and things like that. One of the programs I think I'm most proud of, and the staff at the Nature Center deserve a lot of credit for, is a program where we actually do about a two-hour lecture on elk and the elk that have been reintroduced into the Cataloochee Valley.
Oh, absolutely.
And then we actually take the group in vans out to Cataloochee Valley to see the elk. And that's an amazing experience, because
a lot of times...
You know, you have the classroom setting and you might be able to bring them out and show them exhibits and things like that. But to take somebody in situ and show them animals in a natural habitat, it's amazing. And what better way to make a connection, especially given all the great work that's been done around getting elk back into our region.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a huge believer, of course, in getting all people back out into nature, but especially kids. And what a great way to do that. What about research programs? I know we talked a little bit about the work you're doing with the Red Wolf, but
sure.
I know a lot of, particularly a lot of the larger zoological parks and a lot of the larger zoos have very active outgoing, ongoing research programs. Do you guys do any?
Yeah, they sure do. We don't, unfortunately, have an in-house research department, but we participate in many research programs that other folks from universities and things have asked us to help with. We work very closely with the University of Tennessee and Dr. Ed Ramsey, who comes and does mm-hmm. a lot of research on black bear behavior and endocrinology
right.
and things like that. So he pays a visit to us a few times a year to collect samples from our black bear. We also participate in any time somebody's doing a research behavioral study. We allow them to come and observe our animals and collect data that could really be helpful to help the animals in the wild. So even though we don't have a staff large enough to support a research department, like let's say St. Louis Zoo or Bronx Zoo or some of the larger facilities, we do what we can to participate, because we have a lot of great folks doing a lot of great work around here in the area, and we want to make sure that, you know, our collection and our expertise can help benefit their overall work.
Yeah. At Western North Carolina, aren't they just starting a bear project of some kind?
Yeah, they sure are. And in the Citizen Times, actually had a great story on this piece of a number of months back about kind of tracking where bears are moving in our area. And, you know, one of the things that we talked about at the break, and when people come to our region, the number one thing they want to see is a bear.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Let's face it. I mean, the Smoky Mountains, you know, is a place where people think of black bear.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing here in Asheville. You know, you think of black bear living in our area, and we live with them. You know,
we go down.
Yeah, we live with them just like people live with raccoons in other parts of the country. But really, by studying how bears are moving and the movement that they make during different seasons, we can kind of get a sense of if they're going to come in harm's way, or if they're going to interact with communities in our area, or if they're going to be looking for food, or the scarcity of food, stuff like that. By looking at their behavior, we could really tell a lot about the seasonality and the health of our ecosystems, because as they move, they kind of have the instinct to know where the food's available and stuff like that. We can tell if we're going to have a good year for acorns, for example, and
correct,
things like
yeah.
that, things that they're looking for. So those types of studies are very important. And I know we've talked, and Leslie, you mentioned that we had a bear in our area that had a collar on, and
mm-hmm.
people may come across these bears that have been tagged and are being charted to see where their movements are happening.
Yeah, that's important work and important research, and I was glad to see that that Western Carolina was involved with that and doing that. Let me ask you, I know volunteers are a big part of most zoological programs all over the United States, regardless of the size of
right.
the park. And And I'm assuming that is the case with the Nature Center.
We're very lucky in Asheville to have a lot of folks that have retired here. It's a great place to come and enjoy nature and be part of the environment. And people from all walks of life that volunteer with us. We have retired teachers. We have folks that were in the construction industry. We have folks that really have a knack for special event planning and things like that. So everybody comes together at the Nature Center and helps us achieve our overall mission.
Yeah. You mentioned teachers. I've got to ask you this one question because sure. I get asked this occasionally. Do you offer any teacher programs for how to teach nature in the classroom?
Yeah, and that's a great question. We have we do project wild learning workshops all
yes,
the time.
Yes, very familiar with it.
We also have opportunities for people to come and do Project Wet and some of the other national programs that are out there that help teach science. But with public education and with STEM, the science, technology, yeah. engineering, and math standards that are now coming out, we're trying to help the teachers in the classroom by showing them how they could use the resources we have at the Nature Center, how it relates to the strands for each grade that they're teaching, and hopefully use us as a resource.
Because do you actually help them develop modules?
We sure do. We have programs that fit the modules perfectly. And, we ask an awful lot of our teachers. And if we can serve as a resource for something they may not be experts on, just like, the Colburn Museum here in town in yeah. Asheville can help with the geology of the region. If we can help with the biology of the region, then we feel like we're creating a kind of a community-based education where teachers can use us as resources.
Yeah, I know a number of years ago I was involved with the National Science Foundation education program and was actually working with some of the zoos around the United States and with Disney in creating teacher training modules to actually use sort of link the zoological parks with the local education systems and actually do some training. The teachers were doing things in the classroom and then bringing the students to the zoo and it's really turning into quite a program.
Well, and the other thing I think that's really neat is a lot of zoos, and Zoo Atlanta comes to mind not too far from us, have done teacher institutes where
yes.
they've come and they've learned at the zoo, but then they've actually gone to range countries.
They have, yes.
Like China. Zoo Atlanta's done a lot of work with China, and they've actually brought teachers to China to learn about the Chinese culture, to learn about pandas in the wild, and to just spend time in a different culture. That makes them such a better, more well-rounded teacher to provide a worldly view to students.
It does. I was very fortunate 2 years or 3 years ago now to head up one of those to Kruger National Park.
Well, that's wonderful.
South Africa.
Yeah.
And,
excellent.
And, actually took a group of 25 teachers there, and I still communicate with those teachers. We took them into the bush and put them in tents.
What an incredible experience.
Absolutely. And they came back not only with a much better understanding about nature and the wild animals, but sort of had that real spirit to teach it.
Well, and not just that, you've created the world is shrinking, let's face it.
Absolutely.
You've created a network now where, you can call on a colleague from across the country or across the world to help you teach your lesson better, to interact better with the students. And, like I said before, we ask an awful lot of our teachers these days, but if we can give them resources to help them bring up the next generation of conservationists or just citizens in general, we're doing our job, and that's what we do at the Nature Center. We give them the tools they need because they're the experts in interacting with the kids. We just try to give them the tools they need to help do their job a little bit better.
Chris, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today, I know people can go. Is it www.wncnaturecenter.com?
That's right.
And I know they can learn more about the volunteer opportunities there, membership opportunities as well.
We have many members that can come to our zoo for free all year and visit other zoos around the country for free.
Well, we certainly appreciate what you're doing with the Nature Center here and with the animals in general. You have been listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart. And I will see you in the wild.